Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Massive Open Online Courses, MOOCs for short, is a new wrinkle to an old idea, the old correspondence course, but it's plugged into the internet where there are more opportunities for interaction and more competition for attention. These are college courses where interested people, can sign up. You don't have to be a college student, and you can take a multi-week class along with thousands of others of people who are sharing the same interest. Some people are really excited about MOOCs, saying they're going to revolutionize higher education. Others say, in reality, MOOCs, maybe not really quite ready for prime time. There's still a lot of work to do. No need to abandon the Ivy-covered campus just yet. So have you taken a MOOC? How did it go? Did you drop out? Did you stick it out? What was your experience? Were you excited about these things? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. And we are joined this half hour by Harrison Keller, Vice President of Higher Education Policy and Research at the University of Texas at Austin, and Justin Wright. He is an education researcher at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
Harrison, can I ask you, so how does this work? How does a MOOC work?
So this is a lot like other online courses that we would do from UT Austin. So we have a faculty member will work with a team of instructional designers, with digital media experts, to produce a course that would be distributed online for free to participants around the world.
So, but how does it work for the user? What experience do they have?
So the user would generally get access to videos, video content of the sort of mini lectures from the professor. There's different kinds of interactive content. So we'll plug in, other kinds of technologies into the platform. There are discussion boards where they can pose questions and exchange ideas with other course participants around the world.
But my big question is it a class that happens at the same time every week, like on Tuesday at 9 a.m., and I've got to be in front of my computer at that time ready to watch this live thing, or is it a video that I can watch at any time, like on a YouTube?
So there's different models for these MOOCs. Generally, what we would do is some of the course materials would be released each week. There'd be some new materials that would be released. There might be some events where there would be live chats that would be scheduled with the faculty members. Sometimes we and other institutions will do some some special events with the faculty member where we can answer questions. But the discussion boards are active all the time, so a lot of times the participant would maybe pose a question or a reflection and get their question answered in a matter of minutes by some other course participant.
But a student, these courses, they open at a certain time, they run for a certain amount of weeks, and then they close. I mean, yeah, the discussion board may continue, but all these other items, you kind of miss out on the pace of the release of information. Is that right, Justin?
So, again, there are lots of different models. Actually, some of the courses that we run through HarvardX have no deadlines that are associated with them except for the final deadline of the class. So a course like The Ancient Greek Hero or Justice, What's the Right Thing to Do, you can literally register on the very last week of the course. You could, to borrow a term from contemporary television viewing habits, you could binge watch a MOOC and binge participate in a MOOC over a weekend and watch the videos and do the assignments and finish it all at once. You know, it would take you about as long as it takes to, you know, watch all of the seasons of The Wire or something like that. There are other courses where actually we keep the courses open even after the final due date. So we have a biostatistics course, PH207X, offered out of the School of Public Health, which to this day, even though you can't earn a certificate anymore in it, all of the video content is there, all the material is there, the discussion boards are still there to view, there are practice problems and practice exams. So you can have a pretty complete learning experience that doesn't lead to any form of certification, but still lets you have much of the same experience that folks had, you know, literally months after the course ends. There's a course we have, Introduction to Computer Science, this year, which is going to be open from January 1st to December 31st. You have all year to work on the course, and then they'll probably open up another round of it in January 1st. So it's really more like an open courseware, like an open learning platform that has the ability to certify people's competence computationally, but they can participate, you know, in any sequence or in any time frame they want to. Other courses are not like that. Other courses are more, they have intermediate deadlines. If you don't pass the midterm exam, you won't be able to earn a certificate at the end. When the course is closed, they're taken offline. There are different models that people are experimenting with.
So who, Justin, who's taking these MOOCs?
A wide, wide variety of people. One of the things about them is that, you know, HarvardX just recently passed a million registrants, and so, or a million registrations in its full history of courses, of which we have about 17 or 18 now that we've run or are running. And they're all kinds of folks. Some of the things about them, you know, in the aggregate, they tend to be folks at HarvardX who are older. The median age is about 32, so older than typical college students. Many of them, about a little less than 70%, already have a bachelor's degree. So many of the folks that we're serving or are registering for these courses are folks that are looking to extend their learning or have already had a four-year college experience and are looking to learn more, either because they're taking a class that enriches them. I was just talking today with the professor of a divinity school class about the early letters of Paul, who her sense was the population was an older population looking for other kinds of intellectual stimulation. The course we have with the youngest median and mean population is Introduction to Computer Science, which maybe makes sense.
Yeah.
A lot of our technical subjects lean towards having more male enrollees. About two-thirds of the people who register for HarvardX courses come from places other than the United States. India is a big second country. Most of the large population countries in the world, Brazil, Nigeria, China, have large representation. But even though, you know, sort of there are lots of people who are signing up that fit certain of these characteristics, there are people who come from 196 countries in the world who are very young, who are very old, who have all kinds of backgrounds and all kinds of stories. So even when there's a relatively, say, small percentage of people who don't even have a high school degree yet, that can still be, you know, thousands and thousands of people.
Right. So, Harrison, is that about what you're seeing, such a huge variety and a number of people who are taking these things?
That's about right, and the demographics for our UT Austin or UTX courses are pretty similar. So we see participants from all over the world, so especially from the United States, India, Brazil, but from a wide variety of countries. It tends to be a little bit more male in the population, but you will see.
We're going to take a quick break, Harrison. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to hear from some of our callers who have taken MOOCs. They're going to tell us about their experience. Want to hear what they have to say. If you've taken a MOOC, if you've passed it, if you dropped out, tell us why. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. We're talking about online courses called MOOCs on The Source. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. We're talking about the future of higher learning. Bill Gates says universities are obsolete. He says massive open online courses are the future. These are free college courses that you can take over the internet. And most of the most prestigious universities around the world are opening their doors to the masses who want to take classes. But there are some issues with these things. Let's talk here from Agant Agarwal. He's the president of edX, speaking at the Aspen Institute, addressing the completion rate and the dropout rate for MOOCs.
So at MIT, let's say the pass rate is 99% or 98%, whatever it is. How did we get there? So 20,000 students apply to MIT each year. Of that 20,000 students, we admit about 6-7% of students. And then of those 6-7% of students, 98 or 99% take the course and they pass the course. So from the based on number of students who apply to students who pass this course, you're talking about 5-7%. Now look at the edX course. We are democratizing education. You know, income, whether your parents could pay for SATs or training to get admitted to colleges, none of that matters. Anybody can come and take a course. It's the ultimate democratizer of education. We have completely flipped the funnel. So anybody can come in. 155,000 people came in to take the course. Some people did the videos. Some people didn't bother to do the exercises. Everybody learned something or the other. Some people just didn't care. But towards the end, 5% got a certificate. So you tell me, which system is better?
Talking about MOOCs, which is massive online courses, open online courses, we're joined by Harrison Keller, the Vice President of Higher Education Policy and Research at UT Austin. Justin Reich, he is the education researcher at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Let's get some of our callers on the air. These are folks who have taken MOOCs. Heather has called in. Heather, welcome to The Source. Go ahead. Tell us about your experience with MOOCs.
Hello?
Yeah. Hi, Heather. You're on the air.
Hi, so I've signed up for three. I took one in gender and comic books, I took one on fairy tales, and I signed up for one on forensic science, but I did not finish it.
So why didn't you finish it?
Well, I signed up, you have to sign up in advance, and it sounded fascinating. It was all about the pizza bomber. But when the time came for the class to start, suddenly everything in my life exploded, and I just didn't have the time. And I kept thinking, well, maybe I'll get a minute, and I can go in, and I'll catch up. And I never did.
All right. Well, that's certainly I can understand that. My life's always blowing up. Heather, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Let's get Scott on the line. Scott has taken a MOOC. Scott, tell me about your MOOC experience.
Yeah, thanks. I actually got my MBA online, and what was described earlier sounds almost exactly like the method that I took. I guess my question is, if it's free and you're not getting a degree, I guess what's in it for the students, and then what's in it for the university? Like, what's the end game with these MOOCs?
All right, and so thanks for that. Let's get the answers from our experts. So Harrison Keller, Vice Provost for Higher Education Policy and Research at UT Austin. Go ahead.
So from the university's perspective, first of all, this is an important frontier in blended and online learning. And so we're, like our colleagues at Harvard, we're active in almost every aspect of blended and online learning. So this is an important area of experimentation. We're learning a lot about how we can teach and how people learn online. So one of the reasons that we're involved in it is just for the new knowledge around teaching and learning. Another thing, that the MOOCs have enabled us to do is extend the reach of the university in ways that nobody would have dreamed of just a few years ago. So we have a couple of courses that have more than 40,000 participants around the world in the course, and so that's a powerful extension of the reach of the university beyond the limits of the physical campus. So for the students, for the participants in this course, it ends up being an opportunity to learn from some of the greatest faculty at these universities, at UT Austin, at MIT, at Harvard, at Berkeley. There's some fantastic courses that are available, and it gives you a sense of some of the exciting discoveries, some of the exciting educational opportunities that are available through these institutions. One of the exciting frontiers, though, that I think the caller alludes to is that we have to think about, well, how does this situate in a larger portfolio? How do the MOOCs sit in a future iteration of a higher ed degree program where students are going to be learning lots of different ways, and it might be that you have students that do a lot of learning on their own through MOOCs, through other kind of resources, have that knowledge certified at the institutions, and then that actually might create more space, more time for hands-on interactions, working with faculty members in the labs, more experiential learning. So we see that MOOCs and online learning is having a lot of potential to actually enhance what we do with the residential campus.
Okay, let's get another caller in on the conversation. Richard has called in. Richard, welcome to The Source. You're
yes,
on here.
This is Richard, and I actually created a learning center after taking a MOOC that I felt that was very successful. I've been taking the songwriting course at the Coursera.org, and I was really skeptical because I'm one of those conservatives that, I got my degree from Texas A&M University, got my engineering. I go, how can this really benefit somebody like me to go online and do it online? You know, is it worth the time and effort to do this, and what do I get out of it? And I can tell you that I was pleasantly surprised. I took a six-week course, and I actually learned how to songwrite, and it was something out of my domain, which, again, my background is engineering. But I wanted to try to take something that involved creativity. I'm very involved in the local inventor and innovation community here, and so I decided to go ahead and create a learning center called TechSpace here in San Antonio, Texas. And so what we've done, we've been following the structured curriculum and then providing a day of the week, a night of the week, for people to come back and be supported face-to-face. So we're using the online curriculum as our method of gaining the knowledge, and then we would come back on a set day and talk about it and how did it benefit us, and then applying that immediately.
All right. Well, Richard, wow, that's incredible. Thanks for those comments. So Justin over at Harvard University, Richard's taken the MOOC, and then he's bringing together people to take these MOOCs together in a community. Is that something that's happening around the country? Is that a new thing?
Yeah, there's, again, this introduction to computer science class, which I've mentioned, which I think has about 220,000 people registered for it. There are meetups that are popping up across the country. I think there's one in the Midwest, which has hundreds of members in it, which had to be moved out of a library to a local opera house. And folks get together to be able to support one another. Some of the people who are there are new learners. Some of the people who are there are just excited to help other folks learn about introduction to computer science. I think these physical gatherings, raise a bunch of really interesting issues. If the promise of MOOCs is that we can deliver online learning, anywhere in the world with an internet connection, but people are still craving that personal connection, that community, then I think that perhaps says a lot about the potential importance of residential campuses in all kinds of ways to come, but also opens up a lot of opportunities for many different kinds of blended learning environments where there's combinations of online and face-to-face interactions. This summer, MIT is in the process of developing a kind of summer of learning experiments where they've invited faculty to create proposals for new courses that would deliberately combine some of these online components and face-to-face components, and it's a way that the online courses that we're creating, one facet of them is to be able to serve different people. And as Harrison talked about, spread some of the research and insights that our faculty are working on with people around the world. But we're also really interested in how these experiments can help us enhance our residential campus here,
right,
here in Cambridge.
So, Harrison, let me ask you, over at UT, that's a public university, and a kind of a problem that we've had is a lack of remedial education, students showing up for the first day as freshmen, not really ready for college-level work. Do you think MOOCs could kind of fill in a gap there so that maybe they could test themselves, find out if they really are ready for college level at UT, and then maybe get better for that so that we don't have a waste of resources?
So I think MOOCs might be one strategy to use to signal to prospective students what the expectations are like at UT Austin. But also, we hear the same thing from our colleagues at Harvard and other universities. We see far too many students that have done everything they were asked to do in high school, and the expectations in their high school courses might not align very well with the expectations in their entry-level courses at the university. So one role of these online courses can be to better signal and provide some assessments so folks would get a sense of, here's the mathematics that you're going to need to have to be able to do STEM fields, for example, to science, technology, engineering, mathematics. MOOCs are only one strategy, though. Like at UT Austin, we use a combination of online resources and face-to-face instruction in high schools and community colleges
through a partnership we call OnRamps, where we have these blended learning experiences where we'll work in partnership with school districts and partnership with community colleges and use the online technologies to make sure that we and that everybody's on the same page, we're all learning together, and we improve the content as we go along, working as a network of instructors, network of institutions. So I think there's a lot of exciting things that we can do, especially in this college readiness space, to try to eliminate that problem about the misalignment.
And Justin, quickly, one quick tip. What would you tell somebody who's interested in getting into MOOCs?
I would say to do your best to carve out some time in your schedule so you can really commit and dig into some courses. But also, you know, there's no cost to registering. So browse a number of them and find something that that sparks a new interest and see if you can commit yourself to really digging in and learning something
All
new
right.
or extending your domain.
Justin Reich from Harvard University, Harrison Keller, Vice Provost of Higher Learning Education Policy and Research at University of Texas at Austin. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.